Hello and welcome to another episode of Annotated 911 with your hosts, Bradit and
Spoon.
Today we're talking about season 9, episode 10, Handle with Care. Although first I want to talk, I almost forgot. First I want to talk about something from last week, because we were talking about in the scene where they're all talking about what they do about Hen not letting them help, and Buck is like, she can't keep isolating herself, and what do we do? And Eddie says, we keep showing up. It occurred to me like later in the week, and I was like, oh, I wish we had talked about this. But I was like, I feel like that him specifically saying that is like perfect as a like connective thread to like directly back to his experiences that he's just had with Chris in the previous season.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Where Chris initially was like, leave me alone. And so he listened and basically like did what Chris asked. And then through that whole process, like, I feel like what he took away from that was that he needs to keep showing up.
Even in the face of rejection. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I felt like that was like a good connective tissue there between those two, like having Eddie specifically say that, where he's like,
yeah,
he's like, no, I learned the hard way that when people like need your help, which like Chris did, like he was in like an emotionally terrible state, like, and yes, it was because of stuff Eddie did, but like that doesn't mean that he doesn't, like, he still needs help. And so even though he was like, leave me alone, I, you know, don't help me, like Eddie's lesson that he learned there is like, no, like you have to just keep showing up for the people that you love, even if
they don't want to let you. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if they're rejecting your help in the current moment.
Which he also puts into play later on in the season, of course, as we'll see with Buck.
Yes. And it's great. We love to see it. We love to see proactive Eddie. Okay. And then there was like another sort of like general thing I wanted to talk about. That's just like media analysis in general. Cause I've sort of like observed that I spend a lot of time and on this podcast, like talking about where the characters are going wrong and like the bad choices they're making and like ways that they're messing up and stuff. And I'm not like critiquing that in a way of like, oh, well, here's what they should have done instead, and that would have been better.
Yeah, no, I think so much of the story is driven by them making mistakes and screwing up and getting it wrong and then figuring out how to get it right, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, in addition to that, it's like, you can't really talk about the ways they're fucking up unless you acknowledge that they are fucking up.
Yeah.
And like, what would have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 better ways to like handle the situation? Cause then that gives you like a starting point of comparison of being like, okay, like how much of a fuck up was this?
What would be the responsible, mature, emotionally healthy response? And what are they doing instead?
And so like, that's really where I'm like coming at it from, is like when I'm like, oh, what they should have done instead is blank, or that was like a really dumb move because of, you know, X, Y, Z. Like, I don't mean it would have been better writing if like they had acted perfectly. It would have been worse writing. But like, you can't really like have the conversation. You can't do the critique unless you're like, you know, comparing it to like a control value. Like, what would have been the sensible thing? And that, I don't know. That was just a thought I was having where I was like, I spend a lot of time being like, these guys are like really blundering. But that's good.
Therein lies the story.
Yes, like that's where the drama happens. But, you know,
and that is, I do think one of the, for me, one of the real appeals of this show is that, for especially for a procedural, it's very character driven. Like, what is going on in these characters' lives is outside of the like unhinged emergencies. It really is driven by their own like hangups and issues and histories, which I appreciate. And it's not necessarily all that common in this particular genre of television.
No, exactly. And I, you know, and that was there from the pilot. In fact, I think it was even a little heavy-handed in the pilot. Like,
yeah. Yeah, they were definitely kind of doing a thing with it there.
The pilot was very clearly like, these are the people who come to save your life when you call 911.
Look at them, they're disasters.
Yeah. And look what a fucking mess they are.
Yes, but we love them.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, that's like always been a vibe of the show, is that it's like they're always like going through some shit and they need to still find ways to like put it aside and show up for their very important and stressful job.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's talk about season 9, episode 10, Handle with Care.
With one of the greatest opening scenes. I love this opening scene so much.
It's so cool. It's, and the cinematography.
Yeah, and it's like, it's because you kind of can see right off the bat that it's a little bit more heightened than 911 usually is. It's kind of got this really big, dramatic action movie feel.
Yes.
And then we learn that we're in Chimney's dream, and it's like, oh, of course that's what it would be like. Of course that's what the inside of his head looks like.
Yeah.
It's just so perfect.
It's really good. I commented that Maddie is a really beautiful sleeper. I love it. This show is like, I mean, we were just talking about how we like that it's like, you know, really character driven and like sort of that kind of makes it feel sort of like realistically grounded and stuff. But in many ways, it's like very not realistic. Like everybody always is like, looks immaculate. Their makeup is perfect.
Always.
And their hair is
even
like,
when they're sleeping.
Yeah, even when they're sleeping. And then we have, so yeah, Chimney, this is a great Chimney episode because he's,
it really
like,
is, yeah.
They, as much as we complained about them not handling the Chimney stuff as much as they could early in the season, they do sort of tackle him now here in like kind of the middle area. It's just
like
they presented this
with that anxiety.
They presented his anxiety around even accepting the captaincy and then didn't really touch it. They just were like, and he changed his mind. But here we see the anxiety is still there. It's not gone.
Yeah.
And now they actually are addressing it in a way that I would have liked to have seen it addressed while
about,
he was
about
deciding.
The decision. Yeah. But I like that they kind of come back to it.
Yes. I'll take it.
Now. And especially, like, it's so good in the way that 911 often is about these things, where it is kind of, he is being extremely silly about it on the surface. Like,
yeah,
that whole, you're going to burn yourself and die because of Buck's mocha.
Catching strays once again.
Again. And Robbie, too. Like, yes. Robbie has to go get the order like a probie.
Yeah, but I just love, like,
might
there's
die.
This is like the third moment this season where like somebody's like tossing.
I love
out
his like gum. Come on, come on.
Yeah. He like turns to Eddie like, are you seeing this shit?
It's great. It's great.
What did I do to deserve this?
Just existing while being just the captain's brother-in-law.
standing nearby. That's your job, is to take those strays. That's his role in the team. But yeah, it is like very, I don't know. I love Harry showing up early and like being such a go-getter. And
I gotta feel bad for whoever was on the previous ship and was like trying to sleep through all of that. Can you imagine?
Yeah. But I loved the, and then they moved into the breakfast scene with Hen and Athena and May. Mm-hmm. There's been so much good Athena stuff this season.
Really? A lot.
Yeah, they're like, you know, they really sort of only had her doing stuff with Bobby, like, fairly often. Like, it was kind of rare for her to...
Yeah, she feels like, much more, like, integrated into the rest of the cast, I feel like, this season.
Well, and I feel like, I think part of it is that, like, they pulled May back a little because Corinne, I think, took a step back to go to college or something. So,
yeah,
like, she just, like, wasn't there for, you know, and then they had to recast Harry. So, I think part of it, like, I think part of why they were leaning on her and Bobby almost like so exclusively was just like, you know, like actor churn, but
right,
you could still feel it. Like, you
know? Yeah, it still ultimately has an effect on how the storylines play out in the show. And I think that's been a nice change this season.
Yeah, like just because I know why on the back end stuff is happening doesn't mean that like the effect on the front end isn't still there. Like,
yeah.
I could just be like, oh, okay, I see. I understand.
We know why.
I also loved Buck's coffee is the only work experience he has line.
That's great. He's like, the little asides in this episode are so funny. They're so consistently great, I think.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is about. Like, that feels like, that really does feel like such a Buck line to me, where he's just kind of like stating the obvious, like... You know, it feels similar to me when, like, in Jinx, when Hen is, like, dogging on the wham, bam, thank you, ma'am line. And he's just like, it doesn't rhyme. Like, that's the only work experience he has. Like,
and then he gets, and then we have that great scene in the locker room with Eddie and Robbie.
Yes.
Trying to, like, give him the double puppy dog eyes. And yeah, he's like, no. Once again. No. I am not doing this again. Which I love kind of the implication that he's been sort of managing Jim's anxieties about this. And he's like, no, yeah. I'm done. I'm not doing it again.
Well, and this also isn't the first time that Eddie in specific has been like, you go talk to him. Like, people keep being like, somebody needs to talk to Chimney. And then, like, all heads in the room just, like, turn to look at Buck. And he's like, come on.
And then they pull out the big guns with Hen, which
yes.
was so great.
Yeah.
Like, I really like that scene between them.
I loved it.
Especially since it's kind of coming off of this conflict between them. And she's pretty blunt. Like, she's very, like,
she's more than no blunt. She tells him he's acting like Gerard.
Yeah, she is pulling no punches.
That's so harsh.
That was really, really harsh.
But he needed to hear it.
He needed to hear it. And it could only come from her.
Yeah. I mean, really, yeah. Because, like, she's the only, like, I think everybody is aware of Jim's history of being benched like that. And I mean, she also wasn't there for it since he was the first one of the team to arrive.
Right.
But
she was there closer to it. And the same thing happened to her in the same station.
Yeah. So, you know, it really is. It's like, I mean, yeah, he's being nice about it and like telling him to sit and watch TV, but it's still the same thing. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's well-intentioned. It's not. You know, it's obviously it's not the same thing in the sense that Gerard was doing it, but it's still the same thing in the sense that you're not letting him get the work experience that he needs to do the job.
Yeah, exactly. And the way they wrapped it with that beautiful little speech, I thought was and then the speech that gets interrupted, like, I thought was
classic.
Great.
Classic.
He was really on a roll. And, you know, I love that he was, like, offended that his really good speech got cut off.
You know he was practicing that on the drive-in. And that great moment in the loft when he comes in and Harry's like, Buck said it was okay.
Yeah. Like, just as long as I didn't touch a knife, Buck said it was fine.
Immediately throw him under the bus. Like,
I can so perfectly picture... the run-up to that of Buck, like, consciously choosing to, like, and I'm, like, I feel like I can very easily picture him, like, doing a lot of that kind of thing, like trying to like subvert Chimney's attempts to like not let him do anything because it's like anything's dangerous. Like, you know, like here, help, come help me cook. Like, he's not here yet. Like, it's fine. Like, here's here's a broom. And, like, here's a broom. I trust you. Go ahead. Like,
yeah. And like, Buck's not at all like, Harry is anxious about Chim coming in and confronting them, but Buck's just like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Like, he's not at all bothered.
No,
he knows where this is all coming from. You know?
Yes, he gets it. And also he thinks Chim's being completely ridiculous. And
which he is.
Yeah. And they already sent him to go talk to Hen. So, you know, like, they're working on it.
It's but just, yeah. I don't know. Like, all of the firehouse stuff, that whole thread, it was just so fun.
It was really fun. It was like just like fun team dynamics. And yeah. And then I loved
Harry gets to save the day in the end.
He gets to save the day. And I loved that it was, I don't know. We need to maybe like explore in future seasons the fact that Chim is like slightly prophetic in his dreamscape because it's the same,
right. Yeah. It's the same location. Thing. And the rain and everything.
They're just up above instead of down below, which, you know, again, it's like that sort of thing of, is this because they blocked off that street for the first scene? And so they're like, well, we already got it blocked off. Let's film the other scene here too. Like, you know, two birds, one stone.
Or is Chim mildly psychic? I mean, ghosts are sort of real in 911.
Yeah. So there we go. Chim mildly psychic, but not in a way that's helpful at all.
Just gives him anxiety dreams.
Yeah, just anxiety dreams with a location that is semi-accurate. Okay, so we've got the pressure cooker call.
Yep.
Which to me, I was like, lady, don't run towards the shaking, right, screaming pressure cooker.
Maybe move yourself and your son away from that.
Yeah.
But I get it. I mean, I think that's, people do that a lot instinctively. Like,
yeah, they do. Like, just this evening, day after I watched this episode, we were making some dinner in the Instant Pot, and it started making, like, a noise, and Mr. Butt was, like, immediately getting out. And I was like, don't go and look at it! Like,
but that's what you gotta do, right?
Yeah. He's like, what is wrong with you?
Well, you see, there's this show.
I was like, okay, like the last episode I watched, somebody got exploded by a pressure cooker and almost died. He's like just rolling his eyes at me, which, you know, was deserved, I'm sure. Because the Instant Pot didn't explode, so.
Well, I'm glad. But yeah, this is one of those episodes with the extremely thematic calls.
Yes.
Which they don't always have, but these ones were very thematic.
Very thematic. I loved that old man. I loved him.
Him and his lawnmower, escaping on his lawnmower.
Yeah. And the actor,
it was such a great reveal because they kind of do build it up like, oh, he's got dementia. He's just wandering. He's lost and scared. And he's like perfectly fine. He is.
Well, and even with
on his lawnmower.
Yeah. Even with just the lawnmower, like that still could be like a dementia play.
Right. Until she actually starts talking to him. That it's like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, your son is doing an elder abuse.
A little bit, yeah.
like very legitimately. Like, luckily, he's just a neurotic freak and he, like, walked it all back. But, like,
yeah.
Installing cameras, taking his keys, not believing anything that he says. And, like, he's, like, very clearly of sound mind. So, like, what is going on, dude? Do you need to, like, adjust your meds? Like, what is this? Like, you need to cool it, dude.
Yeah.
Which, again, luckily he did. But I love that whole plot. It was so fun. Like, truly one of the best calls of the season, I would say. Like,
yeah.
It's fantastic. Oh, yeah. I thought that actor was phenomenal.
He was so good. And that the couple, whatever, his lady friend, whose name I can't recall now.
Yeah.
Cheryl, very sweet, I think. Together. Cheryl. Yeah.
You were so cute.
Like, oh, yeah, she is real, actually.
Yeah. Where'd you guys meet?
Cameras now for your own sake.
Yeah. Where'd you guys meet? The internet. You should try it sometime.
That's hilarious.
Oh, one thing I noted is the kid from the pressure cooker call, he has like a weirdly good understanding of plumbing.
I was thinking that, yeah.
He's like, oh, that's the gas line, and that's the shutoff valve. And if I shut it off, then the gas will stop flowing to the stove, right? And it's like, you're eight. Like, why do you know that?
I mean, I guess that's one of those things that your mom could show you to be like, don't mess with this. It's the gas valve.
I guess so, yeah.
So you mess with it, right? Obviously.
Yeah, hopefully not. Jeez. Oh, and on that same call, like, yeah, once again, Buck being like having no patience for Jim, he throws out his little can't protect him from everything, like, wink, wink.
Very pointed. Yeah. Very pointed. And then, of course, we have the Eddie plot, which is set up for the Eddie and Abigail thing, which I love.
I love so Abigail. It's all of it. It's all, yeah. My note is just Abigail exclamation point.
She's so great. The actress is so great.
The actress is phenomenal.
I love that it kind of starts with Eddie getting baited on the stand.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously he doesn't lose his temper or anything, but it's kind of like, here's the ghost of your past coming up to haunt you, and it's hurting somebody else. And it's just, it's kind of brutal. That, like, it's a little bit understated, but it's kind of awful.
Yeah, that really is, like, one of his nightmares. Is like, yeah, bad things that he's done in the past hurting people in the present is...
Yeah, and I mean, this is, like, 6 years in the past now? This is a ways back at this point.
Yeah. And yeah, I just love everything about this whole plot. I just love the whole, it's so good. I think it's like a really good, it's just like a, like, very decently dramatic plot for them to do. Like, it feels like very fresh.
I like it a lot because it's, and I think I said this when it first aired, it's the sort of plot that could only really happen to Eddie as a character, I think, because it's kind of got this, like, even their initial connection is over this kind of, like, her initial attraction to him is this, like, oh, you're like me, you're angry too, you felt lost, you get it.
Yes.
And how did you deal with it? And then, of course, the thing is, he has what she doesn't have at that point, which is a support system.
Yeah.
And it's this tendency Eddie has of relating to kids on certain kinds of calls and seeing himself in them and getting invested. Like, he does that with Charlie back in season 4.
Yeah. He's either seeing himself or he's seeing his son.
Right. Yeah. And I think with Abigail, he is seeing himself in a lot of ways. And so he gets invested and he brings her to the station. And that's when we sort of start seeing him through her point of view as this, like, beautiful, handsome prince bathed in golden light, you know?
Yeah. One of my notes is, they cranked up Eddie's pretty. Which I have noted on multiple occasions. He's already the most beautiful man in the world, but when it is like an Eddie specific episode, they do often, like, really dial it up, where it's like, okay, we've got to get the hair just perfect and the skin is glowing and his jacket's unbuttoned and he's sitting in the chair with the white button down and, like, look, you could tell they're like, Ryan, turn it all the way up to 11, and he's like, on it, boss. Like,
but I think in this particular thing, we also, like, we're specifically getting him from her point of view.
Yeah.
Like, we're kind of, it's the kind, camera is kind of, like, doing this thing, lingering on him in her point of view.
Yeah, absolutely.
That kind of makes him this sort of almost fairy tale character.
Yes.
Which is a contrast, I think, to when she shows up to his house, because that scene is in Eddie's point of view, and he's not framed the same way.
Yeah.
He's framed as, like, tired and anxious and overwhelmed and
Yes.
Kind of uncomfortable the whole time and then really yes. uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I noted is, and this connects directly back to Maddie being a beautiful sleeper, but Abigail looks so well put together.
Yeah.
She's got like very nice matching outfit with like the nice matching purse, and her hair is like immaculate. And I'm like, this girl just got kicked out of foster care and is living out of her car. Why how does she look like this? But it's fine. But it's, everybody it's always the same, looks it's like
the same reason every house on this show is always immaculate, including the ones where toddlers live.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I'll allow it. I mean, not that it's impossible to look put together and nice and like well-groomed and stuff when you are without a home. Plenty of people manage it every day, but she's just like sitting here talking about how she has no resources and all they gave her is a bus ticket. And then her grandmother kicked her out and gave her a car. And so it's like, okay, this sounds pretty dire. I know.
Yeah.
This sounds like she doesn't even have money for like a gym membership to like go take a shower or whatever. But I don't know.
One of the many things they didn't think through the practicalities of, I don't think.
Yeah. And I mean, I get it. Like, this is her court date. So probably, like, or hopefully her attorney was like helping her out in that regard of like,
yeah,
you know, you need to look presentable or whatever. So,
which also I have to say that it is actually insane that her parents got acquitted.
Like, it's insane.
She it's was found by insane. EMTs chained to a table with tetanus. Like,
yes. Well, and I think like based on how Eddie like very carefully described the bedroom, quote unquote, where she was staying, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I think he probably got told that he's not allowed to make like conjecture
that she was
locked like,
in.
Yeah. And chained to the bed, although there were chains on the bed.
Right. So that seems like a reasonable conjecture to make.
Also, if she's like saying that they locked her in and chained her to the bed
and she's found chained to a table, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think their very tenuous like cheat for it is that like we only see Hannah and Eddie's testimony and none of Abigail's. So that then right. It's like, well, what I saw was a bed and it was rusty. Yeah. So that like they can't be like, they were keeping her prisoner in this bedroom and chaining her to the bed because, like, they don't technically have proof of that. But, like,
right.
Abigail's word doesn't count for anything, apparently, because it happened apparently off screen. Not. So now they're acquitted.
But importantly, that's how we get that excruciatingly uncomfortable scene at Eddie's house, which
yes.
I always have to brace myself to get through because it's so uncomfortable. It's such an unsettling vibe.
It's so the unsettling. Whole way through. She just invites herself in and he's like, okay, well, I guess I'll feed you because I'm a nice person and you're an 18-year-old who's living out of her car. So
right. But I love and this is kind of what I was saying earlier about this is a plot that could only happen to Eddie.
Yeah.
Because he is so bad at drawing boundaries, especially when it comes to like his own comfort.
Yes.
Like he is uncomfortable with this from the moment he opens the door. He's like, what is going on with this?
Yeah.
I'm not cool with this, but he can't just be like, what are you doing here? No, you can't come in. We're eating.
Yes.
He's not capable of doing that. So he invites her in and then he's kind of like gritting his teeth through this whole conversation over the dinner table.
Yes. And we have yet another Alex romantic interest, like,
God, I'm so glad they didn't go through with that.
Where it's very clearly that's what they're trying to do. Where it's like, oh, who's Alex?
Oh, she's pretty.
Yeah. And then there was another one earlier in the episode, Buck's delivery of, oh, it's Alex, when Eddie like invites her to the station.
Right.
Is also, I would say, delivered in a very
like, ooh, who's your lady friend?
Ooh, yeah. Ooh. Oh, Alex, you invited Alex again, huh? Ooh. You know, like that was very much the delivery. Again, thank right. God this went nowhere. But also, while we're on the topic of Alex, let's get her out of the way. But like, once again,
faith-based transitional housing.
Horrible
great
at
move.
Her job. Horrible at her job for no reason.
For no reason. Like, what were you thinking?
Or like, writers, what were you thinking? Like, I just
one
don't,
or the other.
Like, why?
I mean, we're not meant to think that she's bad at her job. So I think the writers are just terrible.
Yeah, I think they're just like kind of shitting the bed on this character, like
inexplicably, really.
Inexplicably.
Like, you could have done so much better and it wouldn't even have been hard.
It wouldn't have been hard. She could have been good at her job. And this isn't even like the last time where they made her bad at her job so that Eddie could be good at her job.
This is just, yeah.
This is just no like, because you don't like, and they don't even like make a thing of it where like, Abigail's like, I couldn't stay there because it was fucked up. Like,
right. So we're just meant like, to think that the faith-based transitional housing is good for this woman who is recently tied to a table by her church.
Yeah. So glad Alex is gone, because apparently they were unwilling to write her as good at her job. And that's annoying. Like, what the fuck was that? But yes, the Eddie scene. Okay, so like for me, there's two aspects to this Eddie and Abigail, like the kitchen scene especially.
Yeah, yeah.
One is like all praise, but the other is this is an insane thing for Eddie to be saying to her in this scene,
yeah,
where he's like unloading emotionally on this fraught girl.
I mean, that's an Eddie move, though. Like, he does that sometimes.
He does.
He overshares. He'll keep everything buttoned up so tight, and then he'll just overshare in the most insane circumstances sometimes.
Yes. I mean, we saw it with the Uber situation and stuff. But, like, I don't know. To me, this is, like, it feels more like a moment where he would still have tight rein on that and not be unloading on the girl that he's like saved and is like trying to, you know, like it's, I don't know, like because she is like a child in his mind, basically.
Yeah. I think for me, it was like, it was a manifestation of his discomfort with the whole situation. Like he is, I mean, I think increasingly over dinner as she's kind of like, oh, you're so young to have a son. Like he's kind of slowly picking up on what the vibe is here, and it's making him extremely uncomfortable, and he's kind of trying to be like, he's sort of flailing emotionally a little bit in that scene. I think
I think he is kind of all over the place. But like the other way that I feel like it's an insane thing for him to be unloading on her is that it's just literally insane that he's
this anxious about his kid getting on
that
the
he's guilt tripping himself about being a terrible father
because your 15-year-old is riding the school bus
the literal school bus. Like, Eddie, what are you talking about? What are you talking about, sir? That's the school bus. That's literally its whole job is to take kids to school. So many kids do it. It's not like Chris is the only one. Although I love the earlier
Eddie
moment.
And his little anxiety disorder.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's got to be extra hard on himself. Can't even drive my kid to work if he has to take the bus. Even though it's clear from the earlier conversation that, I don't know, it seems to me like Chris maybe even asked to ride the bus.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely the impression I get.
And
yeah, Eddie's kind of trying to interrogate him about it.
Yeah, like who do you sit next to? I love Chris's, have you ever ridden a bus?
He's so funny.
And Eddie deserved that 100%. Who do you sit next to? He's like, there's not assigned seating. What is wrong with you? Like,
I love him.
Yeah, I love them both. I love them both so much. But yes, the rest of this scene is like, it really is set up as like almost a thriller.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In like the vibes, like honestly, it kind of feels similar to like the roles have been reversed, but it feels like Ryan's movie Boy Next Door, where he is instead the too young person who is like taking a romantic interest in the age inappropriate adult.
I love that he doesn't get that's what's going on at first. Like, because to him, she is a child. Like,
yes.
That's not even on his radar until she tries to invite herself to stay over. And then he's all of a sudden like, oh my God. Oh God. Oh God, no.
There's like, you know, they even have like this sound effect of like the ringing in the ears.
Yeah. And I mean, because he's
practically
trying to
Kill Bill sirens.
Right. Like, up until then, he's kind of trying to gently hint that this is not a good time. Maybe you should go home now. Please leave my house. But then he's like, no, leave. Get out of here.
He's like, okay. Subtlety was not working, obviously.
And he's just like really genuinely kind of horrified, I think, that that's how she's perceiving all of this. Like,
yes. Absolutely.
Him, that is a child.
Yeah. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Nope, 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 nope. Out. Get out right now. Get out of my house. And it's like, it's very perfect. But also it like makes so much sense from her side of things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's this kind of uncomfortable combination of this like romantic infatuation and a desire for a father figure. And I do think it's both of those things. With her.
Yeah, it's absolutely both of those things. And it also makes a ton of fucking sense considering she just got out of a hardcore conservative Christian like
cult. Yeah.
Where those are definitely the vibes they're throwing around in that sort of environment of like, you need a man and like, you know, like the man is your protector, and like, you know, there's all sorts of like weird enmeshment of the husband father like dyad sort of like vibe in those sorts of environments. So that's already like where her sort of mind frame is, I would say, even if she's like in the process of like deprogramming herself or whatever.
Right.
Like, that is not a switch you can just flip off. So I think it makes like a ton of sense that, especially with like the comments that she's making where she's like, oh, you're a dad. And like, oh, you're such a good dad. Like, she's basically like, wow, look what a good provider you are. And like, you're like a fantastic patriarch, or, you know, is like basically like what she's like putting down. And he's like, of course, he's immediately like, no, I'm not. I can't even drive my kid to school.
Like, he doesn't, I think he doesn't really register kind of at all what she's perceiving about him.
No, because it's like so far outside the realm of like consideration for him, because she's a kid. It has not occurred to him at all.
Yeah.
But it does make so much sense for her. And it's just such like a beautifully messy thing. Where like both sides, I can see how they got there and like how this like conflict has arisen. And, you know, she's not really, the way that she is in the wrong is like fully understandable. And like, it's more like, oh, this poor girl. Like,
no, exactly. And I remember being so worried when I watched the episode, when we get to that ending scene with her picking up Chris and it's like a cliffhanger. I was like, oh, God, are they going to actually go and make her the villain after all of this? And then they didn't. And I was so, so glad that they didn't.
Yes.
she remains this sympathetic character.
Yeah, they actually did literally exactly what I thought they were going to do, which is the fake out.
Yeah. Yep.
Where, you know, where's my son? And he's right there.
Literally on the couch playing video games.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, since we brought that up, we're going to go on a slight architecture tangent. The building that is playing the role of Chris's school in this episode, it caught my eye, and I noticed the verbiage on the side, and it is, it used to be an airport, and it was built in, like, the 20s, and it was, like, one of the main airports for Los Angeles, like, way back in the day. And if you, like, look up the Wikipedia page for it, I can't remember what it's like Los Angeles Air Terminal or something like that. But yeah, like, tons of famous people went through there. Amelia Earhart bought her first airplane there. And, like,
oh, wow.
Howard Hughes went through there, and like, Charles Lindbergh, and just, like, a whole bunch of famous people were like, yeah, we were all hanging out at that airport. And then it was kind of buffeted on the winds of history for a while, and eventually Disney bought it, and Disney Imagineering offices were housed there for quite a long time, and they might still be there, but I don't remember. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. Disney still owns it, which is why they're filming at it. But yeah, that specific building is now, like, a event space or something. So, but yeah, I thought that was interesting. I was like, oh.
That's actually really cool.
Got a fancy, cool building here. And it's playing Chris's school. But yeah, I just love the whole Abigail plot. It's all just really, really good. And I think they just kind of nailed it at every turn, where it was like, yeah, like you said, like, it could have gone other directions that I think would have been a real failing to.
Yeah.
The themes or the characters or whatever. But no, I think they made good choices, and the actress is so good.
She is so good. She's so, like, good. Like, that whole, like, I know I keep banging on about that dinner scene, but it's so fucking uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is just down to her kind of doing this wide-eyed adoration, yeah, of Eddie, that's just a little to the left of how she should be acting.
Yes, absolutely. Him. Yeah. And I don't, and she just, like, she's so good at, like, doing the like, fast turns into, like, oh, I've messed up and I'm upset, yeah, and, like, on the verge of tears now, and, like, my life is ruined and horrible and everything's bad. And it's like,
yeah.
And so it's just like, like, I don't know. I just really love the, like, sort of push and pull there, where, like, you know, because, like, I, at least for me as an audience member, I'm sort of in the same boat as Eddie, where I'm like, can this girl just catch a fucking break? Can, like, somebody just, like, help her? And, like,
yeah,
she just needs somebody to, like, hold her steady while she gets on her feet. Like, Jesus, like, she's just not having a good time, and which is, like, totally where Eddie's coming from, where he's like,
yeah.
And, you know, I probably would have done the exact same thing at every turn in his shoes, where it's,
yeah, I mean, and that's like the thing, like, it's coming from this place of empathy and,
yeah,
and a desire to help this kid who is clearly struggling terribly and has been through something really awful.
Yeah. And, you know, and, like, the very awful recent thing of, like, specifically, mm-hmm, getting tetanus and, like,
kidnapped,
all of that, but also, like, the whole rest of her life that led up to that, like,
yeah,
she was in this cult the whole time, like, those are her parents, they were raising her the whole time.
Like, yeah, that could not have been a good situation, even, no, before they, again,
tied her to a chained table,
chained her to a bed, and then a table, and had her exercised.
Yeah,
when she had tetanus.
Yeah, so yeah, I really feel for her. And I'm glad that it eventually works out. But and like the next episode is so heartbreaking. I guess we'll talk about it once it's like time to actually talk about it. But yeah. Instead, let's talk about how excited Harry is to clean toilet.
That was so cute. That was so cute. And everybody kind of like
cheering him
starting
on.
Starting to do the chant. Like,
yeah.
Instead of handling him with kid gloves, all of a sudden he's getting the Proby treatment properly. And he's so excited.
Yes. It. He's so excited for everybody to be shitting all over him. Which, like, I feel like he's got like a really good mental framework around that whole thing. Like, he's, I don't know, he's like really like prepared to succeed, I think, with his like very good attitude. Oh, and the knife scene.
Yes, yeah.
The knife scene was really beautiful and poignant, and you know, them just Athena gifting him Bobby's old knife, but then also giving him the new one. I thought that was just gorgeous. I just loved that. That like that had me all
symbolism of it all. Yeah.
Yeah. It had me all verklempt, and you know, my heart was filled with glitter and pain. as so many Bobby related scenes make me feel in this season. Yeah. And the really cute Madney scene with Datasaurus Rex.
Yeah, their family scenes are always so good. And like, I think this is one of those, they don't always pull it off, but I think this is one of those scenes where the ending montage is just really great, because we have that like, what do you mean? You almost died?
Yes.
Wait, Tim? and then it cuts. And then it's like, he's in trouble now. But you don't get to see that, because we cut to this other beautiful scene of the woman and her son roller skating.
Yeah. He's in trouble, but it's cute trouble.
It's cute trouble. He's not in big trouble. He's just got to go explain himself.
He's just going to be like, it's fine. I just almost got hit by a car. It's no big deal.
Don't worry about it.
Harry saved me. It's fine. It's literally fine. I'm like scanning my notes. Yeah, I think that's pretty much most of it.
Yeah, I think that's everything I had.
I had some little bits about like, Buck, of course, was the first one to be like, is Eddie back yet from court?
Yes. He's keeping tabs, as he does.
And then we had another great, like, Robbie foot-in-mouth moment.
Oh, like, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, usually Buck's the one bringing in strays.
Yeah.
not that you're a stray. Like, I love that he just, like, says shit, and then he's like, wait.
That sounded really rude.
I did not mean to say that way.
It's like it's a really fun little character beat that they've decided to give him and just like keep doing, and I really love it. I'm like, yes, just keep doing this is so funny. Yeah, it's like it's such so a great. Funny aspect to his character. And then I think that's probably it. Great episode. I love this episode.
I love it. I forgot how much I liked this episode until I rewatched it, and I was like, oh right, pretty much every bit of this is fantastic.
Yeah, it's like tens across the board. Like I liked all the personal stuff. I liked all the calls.
It had a good balance, I think, of everybody.
Yeah.
Kind of having something interesting to do.
The calls matched well with the rest of the episode. Like, it just was really, really solid across the board. It's like it's a top tier, like, 911, like, epitome sort of episode of, like, yeah. That's
kind of a classic
episode.
Yeah, it's a very classic 9-1-1 feel, I think. Yeah.
And that's like something that we've both observed before now, too, is I do feel like they must have made a concerted effort to go back to the formula with this season, because it's really consistent in that it does feel like they're like really making an effort to, I don't know. Maybe Tim like went back and watched early seasons or something. Like, I don't know. Like,
wait, this was really smart. We should do that again.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, you should.
But it really does feel like that, where they're like, we need to get back to our roots. Like, that's.
Yeah.
And they're mostly succeeding, I would say.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And then next week we have the auction episode and Chris getting quote-unquote kidnapped.
That was such a beautiful, like, they did do exactly what I was expecting them to do based on the trailer, which is, you know, just like the cliffhanger fake out.
Yeah.
But that week in fandom was...
It was pretty great.
It was a thing of beauty with, you know, everybody being like, oh, Chris is getting kidnapped and like Buck's gonna, you know, I remember I was like before I like watched the trailer 15 times and like put together that, oh, it's fake. And it was like, you know, we were all still riding high on like Chris actually getting kidnapped. I remember like typing frantically to you like, Buck better be involved in this or I'm going to be so mad. Like,
I do remember that.
And you know what? They didn't let me down. They didn't
they
let
did
me down.
They did not let you down.
He called Buck immediately. But it was such a, like, I love moments like that where, like, for like one beautiful week or like one beautiful hiatus, it's like, you know, everybody's like, okay, we need
Everyone's
to make the most
so
of this before
unhinged.
Canon comes and josses it. And like,
I mean, that's kind of the great thing about being in a fandom for a weekly show like this instead of something where the whole thing drops at once, because you kind of all get to get together and speculate and like play in the sandbox.
Yes. Yeah. And like, there's, you know, there's pros and there's cons, I'd say, to like being active in a fandom for a currently running show. I always think it's better if it's, you know, weekly or whatever. Like the drop all at once is just like the death knell of fandom activity.
Yeah.
But there's more comfort, I would say, in like joining a fandom for a thing that's like totally done.
Less drama, definitely.
And everything's like already settled, you know, like there's less drama in the fandom itself generally, and there's also just less anxiety, at least for me personally, in like, I don't know what are they gonna do.
Yeah.
What are they gonna do? Like, please don't ruin it. Like, please don't ruin it. Like, because I've had so many shows in the past where, like, you know, it just, like, shit hit the fan and, like, it got bad and I had to stop watching or whatever. And so there is always that, like, threat of anxiety of, like, and, you know, there's, like, the quality, like, ebbs and flows, too, like, through seasons with, you know, like, you and I both did not enjoy season 7 in large part.
Really at all, yeah.
But... We stuck around and we both really liked season 8 and 9. So, you know, here we are. So,
yeah.
But, you know, with those trade-offs comes, you know, these huge rewards of like, yeah, these like really fun moments where there's a whole week where everybody is like, okay, everybody like write your Chris gets kidnapped fix as fast as possible. We got to get these.
Because
like-
we know. We know something's coming down the pipe and we don't know what it is.
But for now he's getting kidnapped and they're both upset and like, you know, like we need every version. Everybody start writing and write them and post them as fast as possible. And like, thank you to all the fast writers in fandom, because like,
yes,
couldn't be
me. I
love
them. I'm not one of them, but I admire them greatly.
Yeah. Could not be me, but I love your work. Thank you for your service. So that was I am just like giddy just even remembering it, because it really was like a really fun week of just
it
like
it really was. Yeah.
And I really want, I don't know, I think we're all like holding out hope that like someday they're gonna give us Chris in Danger, like for real.
I mean, season 3, that's why the tsunami arc is so iconic, or a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and 47 other things, but like,
right,
you know, we all want Chris in Danger and his two worried dads, like that's it could lead to some great things.
It could lead to some great things.
Okay, well, I guess let's wrap it there. If you want to come chat with us, we're both on Tumblr. This podcast has its own Tumblr page. annotated 911, no spaces, or just, you know, either of our usernames. It's also, we're also both linked there. So yeah, come tell us we're doing a good job. Okay. Talk to you next week.
All right. See you next week.